Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your grappling street brawl of music news and criticism. I'm Joe Coscarelli, filling in for John Caramonica. That was Troye Sivan's Rush. Big dance record, big moment for Troye Sivan. And to discuss his new album, Something to Give Each Other, released this October, I am joined by two writers who have thought a lot about Troye Sivan over the last couple of weeks and maybe the last couple of years. We have Harry Tafoya, freelance writer for Pitchfork and NPR. Hey, Harry, thanks for coming on.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And we also have Shad D'Souza, a freelance writer and critic. He's written for The Guardian, for The New York Times. Very amazing debut at The Times. Is that right, Shad?
Yeah, my first one.
Which we will talk about in context of Troye Sivan. Thank you guys for coming on.
Thank you.
Troye Sivan, Something to Give Each Other, third album from this artist. Top line thoughts. Where are you guys at on this music?
It goes really hard. It's really fantastic, actually. I was not prepared for how good it actually was.
Shad?
When I first heard it a few weeks ago, I was a little down on it. And then since then, I've been listening to it so much, and I think it's really good. I always liked his music. I always thought it was like a cut above a lot of other pop musicians. But this one makes me kind of realize that it's much easier to like, even though I liked those past couple of records as well.
So you came in with pretty high expectations. Let's rewind a little bit and talk about why that is. Who is Troye Sivan, Shad, and why are the feelings about him so strong in certain corners of the internet, even though he continues to bubble a little bit under the mainstream?
He started out as a teenage YouTuber growing up in Perth, Australia, and he's always displayed this real kind of like aptitude. Like, he's always been a real student of pop music. And I think his first album kind of got there. It was maybe a bit Lana, a bit Lorde, very suburban, like sadness or whatever. And then his second record, Bloom, which came out in 2018, was like this big step up. And it was like fun and funny and like really carefree. And I think just really showed how studied he was, really, and not in a really labored way, but just a great songwriter, very charismatic. And then he released another EP after that at the start of COVID, which I think was even better. And so I think he's always had this feeling of like, among people who like, quote unquote, like love pop music, the Carly Rae Jepsen fan types, like this feeling right.
He fits in this realm of meta pop star of the moment.
Yeah, he like makes pop that is about pop music in many ways, or like is really indebted to like pop music of the last 20 years. And I think oftentimes that can be good, but not entirely satisfying or not entirely like exciting. But I think he crossed that bridge sometimes. And I think with this album, it's like a big full jump over it. And it really does the thing, to put it ineloquently.
To me, the thing about Troye that's so interesting is he still feels very much like a new artist, like he's still finding his footing. And yet, when you look back at the biography, like, he's been signed to a major label now for a decade, basically, and has been famous even longer than that. Harry, when did you first become aware of Troye? And was it in the context of him as a musician, or did it predate that?
I remember him for the first time with his debut album. I remember it, and I remember hating it in a very visceral way, actually.
Because
well, it did have that very kind of fashionable Lana Lorde, sad, booming, anthemic sound to it. And there was something about, Troye and I are a year apart, and there was something about it where it was like, he is sounding so much more precious and packaged in a way that's not cool to me as a young person back then. But it's that evolution that Chad was talking about is absolutely the case. He has grown into his eclecticism in like a very interesting way, actually. And this really does feel like the kind of culmination of somebody who has gone through real phases to actually become a really coherent artist.
So you're talking about Blue Neighborhood from 2015, his debut, and he had a big hit on that album, right, with Youth. Let's listen to a little bit of Youth so we can talk about where he's grown.
My youth is yours, tripping on skies, sipping waterfalls. My youth is yours, run away now and forever. My youth is yours, a truth so loud you can't ignore.
So that was Youth by Troye Sivan from 2015. Was this a big song, Shad? Like, it's a platinum record, but only really existed in my world, like on certain corners of YouTube, where Troye started first as like a vlogger.
Weirdly, it remains, I believe, his biggest song, which is strange. And like, we can get into this later about, I think there are some kind of hidden barriers that he's facing, or not so hidden, that I think have really impeded him, even if maybe he won't admit it. But yeah, Youth, I don't know, it's one of those songs that I think probably got played on the radio heaps, pop radio, especially in like the daytime hours when really PG friendly stuff has to be played. I remember thinking it was a pretty good song at the time. I thought that album was okay, but really compared to what came after, it now feels so generic and like so of that time, like post that first Halsey album. It feels so limp compared to
it's
like
a
how
bad era track for sure.
Yes, oh my God, I hate exactly. That it's really like the worst manifestation of Tumblr as pop.
That's a good point. And then on Bloom, which comes out a few years later, the narrative is Troye is really coming into his gayness. He's out. He's proud. It's not a secret that Troye Sivan is a gay pop star in the way that it may have been more coy in years or decades prior. What did you take from that album? And when did you feel like he was taking a step forward sonically or as a songwriter?
I think the first single, My, 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 he's like kind of like strutting around and like he's wearing these like suits or whatever. Like it's really like potent and confident. It's such a good song still. The interesting thing about that was that in interviews, he was like, I didn't want to make it too gay because I didn't want it to be censored, which obviously has really changed. But I don't know. What did you think of that record, Harry?
I love that record. It's a really great record. It has still that really massive sound. But when I remember watching that video, I think it really clicked for me what he was about. And it's funny, actually, that you said like he was worried about it being censored, because I was thinking about it in comparison to Rush, for the music video for Rush. And they actually have a couple of weird similarities to them. They're both in these kind of industrial bathroom spaces. They have porn stars in them. I was like looking at them back and forth. And I was like, okay, he's edging toward this thing, actually. He's getting to the point.
Interesting choice of words. Yeah.
Yeah. But he is like getting to that point though, where he can fully assume all that kind of grit that he wants to, it seems.
Thinking back to, this was only 5 years ago, but I think the ground that we've traveled in terms of what is allowed queerness-wise in pop music and popular culture, do you think we've taken a leap in that time? Because it does, or is this something particular to Troye and where he was at in his life, that even on Bloom, when that's supposed to be an adult album, you have a song like 17 or something like that. And yet there was still a little bit of push and pull between how forward can he be about his sexuality.
It's interesting, right? Because I think it's really easy to be like, oh, Lil Nas X, like he's gay and he's a pop star. But if you think about it, his first hit was before he came out, before anyone thought he was gay. And then his second number one, Call Me By Your Name, was pushed there from like virality and like an insane video and like lots of trolling or whatever. And I wonder whether that is a force that broke that ceiling. But when you think about it, how many like gay male pop stars are there in the top of the charts? I still think there is a really tough ceiling to break. And like, obviously you've got a lot of like bisexual female stars like Halsey and Kalani and people like that who are doing really well, but it's really hard to quantify. But I still do think there is a barrier for gay male stars. And like, apart from Lil Nas X and Troye, who has never really made it to the top 10 or the top 20 or whatever, like Rush, I think, peaked at 75. I think there's still a slight kind of like trepidation among the places like radio or whatever that you really need to get to that spot.
I do want to talk about Troy's commercial performance and what that means. But first, let's talk about the music on Something to Give Each Other. Rush, the debut single, drops with, as you've alluded to, Harry, a very sweaty video.
Very sweaty.
Could you call it that? When you heard this song as the lead, like, where did it take you? What did you expect from this album when he comes out of the gate with something like Rush?
The thing about Troye Sivan sonically that kind of was a bit of a kind of struggle for me to get into him at first was that it seemed like the music was so large that it was very difficult for him to actually inhabit it. So it seemed like an effortful strut as opposed to something that was effortless. And it seemed like this music video and this song put together really, I don't know, it kind of situated him just so perfectly. It felt totally embodied. It felt totally natural in a way. And, you know, it does have like all the cues from house music. That's like, okay, now's the time to dance. Those big Village People choruses. It's just such a massive command. Like, okay, now we're going to do it.
Shad, maybe it was your piece. Did you call it Village People Goes to Ibiza?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But at first, like, when I first heard it, I was like, oh, it's tapping into like the kind of like homoerotic nature of like football chants.
And yet this video, which I think we can talk about whether this was effective or not, but this video wasn't without controversy. Do you want to talk us through a little bit of that, Shad?
It was really weird because I think on Gay Guy Twitter, a lot of gay guys just hated it. A lot of gay guys just hate Troy for reasons unknown to me.
Yeah, what's up with that? Take us into the inner mind of Gay Guy Twitter.
I don't know. I mean, I think there's some kind of resentment there probably. And maybe that he's a little more kind of like mainstream leaning than like a lot of the like middle class pop stars who are like beloved by that crew. But then the main thing was all these kind of jokes and memes, but then also like earnest critiques being like, there are only like skinny, ripped people in this video, which is like, fair enough. I don't think anyone's coming for Jenny for only putting skinny dancers in her video. I think it's something that is quite specific to like queer pop stars. And when I interviewed him, he said that he was like, we're held to a way higher standard.
Yeah, Harry, how did you parse the backlash to the Rush video?
It just seemed like kind of a thing that was there and then kind of went away in 10 seconds, honestly.
Yeah, it was like a little bit of a fake controversy, right? It didn't have legs.
It didn't really have legs. I read an interview with him where he said that he considered it like a note. It's not like a massive central problem with his character. It's okay, I'll take that going forward and do so.
Like that, thank you. Your complaint has been lodged.
Yeah, exactly.
He's really good at dealing with stuff like that. Like every single thing that gets lobbed at him, he's kind of just this like cool front, just being like, yeah, okay.
It was funny because people like were actually counting in the music videos that came after. It's like, how many plus size people are in this one? If there's one or two, there's okay. Wow. He's got the bare minimum.
The
basically.
Percentages are going up.
Yeah, exactly. He's hit the target, the sweet spot. So I actually was one of those people who was resentful against Troye Sivan initially. And I think
let's work through that together.
Yeah. I think that it's this kind of thing that's interesting about, and I think that part of this also has to do with like why, you know, it's a thing about gay male pop stars, but I think this is also just kind of a broader point about male pop stars in general. There's not as many. There's been less and less, I feel like, too. And I think part of the reason why is that, like, gay guys, in my kind of analysis, love to relate to maybe a more kind of abstract femininity that they're, like, not actually embodying. They kind of want some of, I don't know, the chaos of Kesha or some of the glamour of like a Jessie Ware or something. You're not going to get that from some twink. The offering has to be slightly different, I feel. And I think that where it clicked for me was like, okay, this is actually something that I would listen to at clubs that I would go to. He seems like somebody I'd want to hang out with, honestly.
Yeah, I did want to ask you guys about that divide, right? Of obviously the queer audience for pop music and for capital P pop music, it is there, but it is often attached, yes, as you said, to a female musician or a straight musician, you know, because when I listened to this album, I couldn't help but think like, this is the music Harry Styles wishes he was making.
Don't get me started.
And yet, Shad, I'm curious what you think here. He does face a little bit of that sort of narcissism of small differences, pushback from his own community. Whereas someone like Harry gets a pass.
No gay guy is listening to Harry Styles. One.
It's true. It's just true.
Okay. All right. Thank you for clearing that up. All right.
The thing with Troy, and it's interesting, and I can see arguments either way, But if you watch his videos, if you watch his interviews, he is still at heart this kind of gangly, awkward YouTuber.
And he has the most beautiful eyes of all time.
Oh my God, they're haunting.
He has this awkwardness to him that I think for like a gay audience who maybe wants someone who is so poised and imperious and regal, that is a turnoff. But I think for everyone else, I think he in many ways has achieved, especially with this album, what maybe like Taylor has tried and failed to do, which is create kind of sex appeal within that kind of awkward, gangly thing. And I think maybe like Bloom and the EP before this, In a Dream, they were like almost there. But this one, I'm like, oh, like, you know, I watched the video for One of Your Girls, which I think is maybe the best song on the album. I think it's so good. And I'm like, oh man, he's so awkward in this video, but there is still something appealing and exciting and like genuine there. But I think that is maybe what causes like this kind of like disjunct with the community that technically should be kind of like uplifting him and like, you know, standing him.
Let's listen to a little bit of One of Your Girls, which I agree is a very strong highlight on this album. So, One of Your Girls by Troye Sivan. Harry, talk us through what's happening in this music video, because I think hitting after Rush and the video in between, I think what's that one got me started. That's back-to-back total slapper music videos for
bangers.
Me.
They're so good. It is almost like a, I don't know. I love the kind of clash of ideas that kind of go through this, but it is just Troye's gangly ass looking sweet face and singing this song about wanting to be one of your girls to this kind of changing lineup of hunky guys, all types, before we hit the chorus in which we like get Troye as drag diva supreme. I don't even know serving. I don't even know how to like put
beyond,
it into words.
Whatever, yeah, whatever the category after that is.
Wigs, sleigh, tear. Like, it's all these boots. Yeah, it's everything. It's funny because like this Troye and drag persona is able to hit that kind of female freedom that you see in, I don't know, like a telephone, like Lady Gaga, Beyonce telephone or something.
And what about the music here? Because I'm really struck by the silliness of the verses. There's a lot of jokes, the face card stuff, get the highest insurance policy possible on your beautiful face.
You should insure that waist. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it's the waist. Sorry. First it's the face. And then in the second verse, it's the waist. And then you get this vocoder chorus that I think has been compared to Kavinsky, Night Call. There's a little bit I Feel It Coming, Weekend and Daft Punk. Is this song the palette that Troye is most comfortable in? Like, how do you think about the production here?
I think it is like of a piece with the other stuff on the record, but I also think it feels a little new for him in a small way. But I think that could be said of every song on the album. Like, he's working with the same people he worked with on Bloom. He clearly has very good taste. There's this really weird Zane Lowe interview he did during the pandemic where he's asked to like play 5 songs. The first one is like a Dean Blunt track. And then the second one is this insane Britney deep cut that sounds like PC music. And then the third one is like something else entirely. And I think this is very indicative to me of like he's getting better and better at like bringing that in while keeping this sound, which like I think for other artists, sometimes I associate this very clean synthy palette with neutrality. But for him, I think because he's been honing in on it for such a long time, it sounds very him. If that makes sense. Do you guys know what I mean?
Yeah. And Harry, you referred to this album in your review for Pitchfork as a masterclass in curation. Talk me through that a little bit.
I think it goes to exactly to what Shad was saying before about the kind of grab bag of references that he's pulling from. They're just so singular. I don't think anyone would ever think to put, for instance, the folk singer Jessica Pratt with a dance beat and then make a pop song out of that. Like that is not an impulse that I think many people have in the first place. To see him do that and to do it well is crazy to behold, actually. I mean, I had many like friends when the album came out, they were like, is that for real? Is that really, did I actually just hear that?
So you're talking about Can't Go Back, Baby, which flips a Jessica Pratt vocal. Let's listen to a little bit of that. So that was Troy Sivan, Can't Go Back, Baby. Are there other highlights on here for you guys, either production, vocally, lyrically? Like, what are the moments that are really sticking with you from this new Troy Sivan album, Something Deep Each Other?
I love Got Me Started so much.
That's the second single, is that right?
Yes, it's the second single. I mean, it's a single also too, where people were also messaging me being like, damn, how did he put that sample in? The chorus is a sample from Bag Raiders, that one meme of people getting yeeted.
So it's a good word. Yeah, how would you describe that meme, Bag Raiders shooting stars? Because I only know it from the meme.
Yeah. I mean, it's just people falling down and getting pulled back in time. Is that, yeah, I'm not sure how to like kind of.
It's the boat accident, right? That's the one I know it from, with the people riding on the boat. And then, yeah, getting sucked into the space-time continuum.
Oh my God, that was so good.
But wait, but Chad, I feel like this song has different weight abroad. What does this Shooting Stars sample mean to you?
Bag Raiders, like, obviously they're Australian, like Troy. To me, that song was like a huge hit. And like, they had other hits, like Bag Raiders were like so huge in Australia. I would be willing to bet that, like, much like me, Troy, that song was just like a radio song when he was maybe like growing up or whatever. Because I think it's very easy to be like, oh, just like a classic like Craven meme sample. But I think the way he talks about it is, oh yeah, I just randomly started singing it in the booth while I was waiting to do my next take or whatever. But yeah, that song was like a big hit in Australia. I didn't realize it was a meme song until pretty recently, which is embarrassing.
But you spoke to Troy about the creation of this album. How was that conversation? Like, where do you think he is at in his artistic journey? And what did he tell you about his inspiration going into making this third album?
He's an interesting one to interview. I've interviewed him a few times now, and you can tell he grew up a YouTuber. Like, it doesn't even feel like he's trying to not give anything away. You know, it feels like it's so natural for him to like slip into this mode of like speaking really earnestly, but having it extremely smoothed over. He's such a pro. Like, he's been doing this for like 15 years. So like, of course he is. But something I did enjoy him talking about was that, like, so like at the start of the pandemic, he moved back to Melbourne, Australia, which is where his family lives. That's where I'm from. He bought a house there. It went viral in an Architectural Digest video, which I highly recommend. His house is extremely beautiful.
Yeah, it's sick. It is very sick.
It's a great house.
Yeah, exactly.
The man
yeah,
has think, good taste. What can we say?
I think a lot of people know him more for the house than the music, to be really honest. But yeah, we talked a bit about Melbourne basically had one of the longest continuous lockdowns in the world. And he talked about the moment you could go out, people just went totally crazy. And he partook in that. And yeah, it was this really weird experience of I've never seen people in Melbourne like party that hard. And it's an interesting city for like a famous person to live in, because it's obviously everyone there would know who he is. But it's also like a really self-contained scene where I don't think there's much interest in celebrity culture, or like, you know, who's around or whatever. So he was like going to gay clubs on Smith Street, which is in Melbourne, has a lot of gay clubs. And like, he was going out to parties and like people would see him around at like art exhibitions or whatever. But I think the way he says it is like, it was a very kind of liberating space for him to be in. And the way he said it to me was like, suddenly he got to live life in a way that was completely, it was almost absent-minded. Like, he would go to the pool and he would meet someone and then they'd go on a date and then that day would last a weekend. And those kind of experiences informed the album, which I think you can really hear. Like, it's very fun and like sexy and carefree, and like, I think it is a very different album than if he had gone through his breakup, which inspired this, in LA. I think Melbourne is like a very, he said that he feels it had a lot of bearing on the album, and I think I definitely hear it as well.
Yeah, I was struck by that as well, him talking about being able to come into this sound and this version of himself back at home. And it reminded me of speaking to Lord ahead of Solar Power, and the same, and she had sort of same experience where she's like, okay, I go to America and I play pop star for a little bit, but my actual life, my real life is back where I'm more normal, and they treat me more normally. And I might be famous there, but it's also like, this is where my roots are, and I can connect with day-to-day life better. This album feels lived in a way that his other music feels like a performance, at least for me. Harry, do you connect more to the sort of freewheeling side of this album or the breakup part of it?
The freewheeling part. Absolutely the freewheeling part. It feels that kind of drifting, that drifting sense of experience where like we're not doing just a breakup song or we're not doing just a hookup song. There could be different emotional textures to that. It just feels so lived in and natural for this particular record. Yeah, it feels highly relatable, actually, I have to say. Yeah, he seems so, I don't know. It doesn't seem weighed down by the fact of a breakup. It doesn't seem weighed down by the fact of being in a relationship with one person. It seems like he's allowed to drift in and out of circumstances. He's talked about this too, about like, he's been single for a while now, and that has itself been incredibly inspiring because like there's just no pressure to have to do anything whatsoever. It could just all happen very naturally.
It also comes on the heels of what I think of as a little bit of a crossover moment. To me, Troy is the breakout star of The Idol from HBO this year, if such a thing can be anointed, given how The Idol was received.
Second to Rachel Sennett.
Okay, but Rachel Sennett, I think, was popping anyway. You know what I mean? Like, she yeah. had, she already had Shiva Baby. She had Bottoms Coming. I feel like Troy and Rachel together, they came out of what was widely considered a train wreck quite unscathed, and if anything, like better than they were before. Harry, I think you said you didn't make it through The Idol.
No, I made it like two episodes in.
Yeah, but you saw him. Chad, what did you make of Troy's performance in The Idol and on screen in general? He plays the creative director to Lily Rose Depp's Jocelyn, pop star slash best friend. And how did you connect that either to the kind of performer that he is musically or not?
I think everyone except The Weeknd came out of the Idol better. I think it was a positive experience for basically everyone except The Weeknd. But yeah, and Sam Levinson. I thought he was good. I thought his American accent was patchy, but I think there is this, it is very in tune with his personality as a musician to be playing this figure who's always making fun of pop music as much as he is invested in it. And I think that comes across on this album as well. It's objectively funny to put the Bad Grader sample on there or say Bussy or like whatever, like do all this crazy shit. And at the same time, it's the most earnest pop album released this year, maybe, apart from Guts, maybe. And I think, yeah, I think he came out really well until the George Harrison cover, maybe, I think. That in the final episode, I think that's a bit ridiculous.
Should we listen to a little bit of that?
I think we should. On its own, it's not bad, but yeah.
In context of the show, it was a little cringe.
I think the real plus of it was that around the Idol's release, the whole cast was like partying together and you got these almost 90s style like photos of Troy and Lily Rose Depp and Jenny and like all these extremely famous people like partying together. And I think that in a lot of ways set the stage for this album that is about partying and loving your friends and like having a wild, weird night. Like, I think that more than the Idol itself, I think that really brought these two parts of his personality together and made him seem fun and cool in a way that he had always been teetering on the edge of. But I think all the, you know, the Khan photos and those kinds of things, I think they really helped set the stage for like Rush, especially.
I think you're right. I think that this, all of this combined and this album included makes Troy seem like a really good hang, right? And you want to be having the kind of fun that he's having with the kind of crew that he's with. Do you see that aspirational aspect of his life and his performance as helping this album, Harry? Or is that potentially a liability given what we were talking about before, his sort of arm's length relationship to a gay fandom?
Big time, I think it helps. Yeah, no, I mean, I think that there's this funny thing where like he wears fame very well. His actions don't seem predetermined. He seems perfectly at ease with hanging out with these ultra famous people and is able to command that space in a way that's really glamorous, actually.
Yeah, he brings a bit of old school pop star glamour to a moment that might be a little low on it outside of Dua Lipa or whatever.
Totally.
Is Troye Sivan the male Dua Lipa? That's the title of this podcast.
Dua's not cool, whereas I think Troye has convincingly made himself seem cool, which I think is extremely rare. And I think just he has a vibe about him, like he, the house thing especially, and then the idol, like I think he just seems like he has good taste, which is so not a pop star thing right now.
Yeah, in fact, you can only be a pop star if you have really awful taste.
Yeah.
And yet, I wonder, is he almost too cool? Like, you know, you think of the commercial performance for these songs. You know, I think you're right, Rush has barely been in the top 100 of American singles. This album, by the time this episode comes out, it will have debuted, but it's not projected to debut in the top 20. I don't believe his previous albums, Bloom was in the top 5, Blue Neighborhood was in the top 10. And it does make me think, is he relegating himself or has he been relegated to, Shad, what you talked about so eloquently in your Times essay about middle-class pop stardom and this entire generation, basically, of singers who are worshipped online and yet who the mainstream have little to no use for.
I don't think the album is so cool as to kind of like exclude him from mainstream fame. I think it is more an issue with there's not really a market for capital P pop music right now. Stuff that doesn't draw from like other genres is dead in the water, I think. And even the songs that are really dancey, like Rush, they're dancey in a really throwback way. It's not in like a BB REXA, Ava Max way. I think there's that, like, you know, just this kind of music. Where are you going to put it? Like, no one wants to listen to it apart from like people on the internet. The second thing is, I do think he's probably a little too gay to be accepted by the really like mainstream gatekeepers, like people in radio. But yeah, for the most part, where is pop music on the charts unless you're Taylor Swift or Miley Cyrus? It's more like an industrial thing. This isn't mainstream music anymore.
Which is crazy given how mainstream it sounds, right? Harry, do you think these songs should be bigger?
I think yes, in terms of quality. I think like they're the best. This is like one of the best albums I've heard this year. Absolutely. But I don't know, like in terms of what I think of as being pop that reaches everywhere, which is apart from those like singers who made it through like the eye of the needle, like Miley or Taylor, where you actually do get, or Lana, who get like full, who emerge like with full characters. When I think about Ava Max or BB REXA, like the most anonymous people, and they're so anonymous to me, completely disembodied.
Like he almost has too much character, too much personality to succeed in that way.
Yeah, 100%.
And it is that thing of Taylor and Miley, like fundamentally of a previous generation. And they're running in some way on like maybe fumes that they've managed to re-spark the fire a little bit. But I don't think we're in an era where pop music can break through. And even if you think about the success of the Olivia Rodrigo singles post-Vampire, the comeback single will always hit number one or number two, but I think it's really the singles after that count on the charts, and they really did nothing. And I think it's just about, unless he's willing to do a remix with Peso Pluma or Morgan Wallen or someone like that. I think about someone like Sabrina Carpenter all the time as the perfect example of this. Nonsense was like a huge radio hit, huge TikTok hit. It has hundreds of millions of streams, but it never made it past like 50 on the Hot 100. And I think it just speaks to like, there's no broad-based support for this kind of music anymore, which is in a way sad, but I think I can definitely see a universe in which this album becomes a cult favorite and then next album he has maybe a top 10 single.
I feel like we've been waiting for that from Troye, that every time it feels like, okay, he has the cult audience, so the next album is going to be the one that hit. And I feel like that happened even on the first one because he had this YouTube audience. Do you feel like he still has that chance to go up another level, or will he live in the sort of Charlie XCX space of middle class pop stardom?
I think it would take a radical overhaul of his sound, to be really honest, like, which is sad to me, but I think he would need to get Doja on the track or like you know, it's weird, right? He had a great song with Ariana Grande, Circa Bloom. I think quite that is one on. Of his best ever songs. Yeah, I think that was one of his best ever songs, and that didn't even chart. That was during the period when getting Ariana on your song would mean it would instantly go to number one. So, like, I don't really know. There's something about him that maybe defies all these things where in my head I'm like, okay, this means that and this means that. Like, it's a kind of a hard one. And I think probably after this album, I think making this album, it seems like maybe he's less interested in commercial success. And I think next one, he'll probably be even less interested, if that makes sense.
Yeah, Harry, is that somehow freeing that he's not finding blockbuster success?
Yeah, how could it not be? And yeah, I think that for Rashad's point, I do not see any way in which he could have a repeat of that kind of old success without kind of major structural changes. The plus side of falling into that middle class is you get to be so much more fun. You get to be right. So much more eclectic. You could take so many more risks within your own scene. It just seems like such a fun place to be, even if you're not selling the same amount.
Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like on one hand, this album really does stick to its guns. It's very cohesive front to back. He's working with, you know, some of his longtime closest collaborators for most of it. And yet there are, you know, on the back half, there's Silly, produced by Ian Kirkpatrick, who's had such success with Dua Lipa on New Rules and Don't Start Now. Got Me Started has a writing credit from Taylor Parks, who is behind some of those Ariana hits from the Thank You Next era. And I do wonder if there was a little bit of, okay, let's just see if perhaps we could sneak one through. Do you see him wanting to collaborate more widely with the biggest hit makers of the time, whoever those may be, when it comes time to make a new album? Or is he gonna stay close to home?
I think his working partnership with Leland, who has worked on all his records and is his best friend, and like they've said that they can read each other's minds, blah blah blah, I don't think that will like go anywhere, at least for a little while. And I think it's yielding better and better results, which is cool. I do think there needs to be some kind of a little more acid in the production. This album is really fun, really great. I think it's honestly, one of the best pop records of the year, but it is really easy. And I wonder whether that is actually what people want anymore. But I can see him, a couple of years ago, he did a call out on his story. He was like, just send me beats, like, you know, stuff like that. Like, I think he's a real workhorse, and I think he's really adventurous, even if maybe sometimes that doesn't come across in the music. But I think probably Rush is like the best example of that, right? Like, it's a pretty weird song, even though it's very accessible. But yeah, I do think he will be trying to work more with other people, whether that's the big hit makers. But then it's like, who are the big hit makers right now? There's no Max Martin right now, for better or for worse. So it's a different thing.
I agree with you, Shad, actually, because I don't like the back half of the record for the most part. It does go down a little bit too smoothly for my taste, honestly. And I think that really the best hits, the biggest highs of the record are front loaded. But I think that it's also funny to like look at the Rush remix, for instance, where it has like Pink Pantheress and Hyunjin. That seems like a kind of funny way of Pink Pantheress and Stray Kids respectively have massive reach, but it's still a very kind of eclectic choice. And it's based on his very intense and earnest fandom of these people. I do think, and then also too, the fact that he is still like working like with this like kind of permanent brain trust of Leland and Oscar Gores. And it seems like he's going to keep trying to have that sweet spot of like eclecticism mixed with agreeably mainstream pop, regardless of how pop actually is.
Fair enough. You were talking a little bit badly about the back half of the album, but How to Stay With You, the closing track, produced and written in part with Alexander Cook, to me is one of the highlights of the album. And so if Harry, if you don't object to that one, let's go out with How to Stay With You by Troye Sivan.
Not at all.
Thank you, Harry and Shad, for being with us. That is our show. You can find every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcasts. Listen to us wherever you get your audio content. That's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube, where you can also find Popcast Deluxe on video with me and John together. John will be back in a couple of weeks. In the meantime, catch us on the Popcast Discord. That's tinyurl.com/popcastdiscord, or in the Facebook group, tinyurl.com/popcastdiscord. Podcast Facebook. Our show is produced by Pedro Rosado of Headstepper Media, and we will be back next week. Let's go out with a little bit of Troye Sivan's How to Stay With You.